And your last name's Potros?
Potros, yeah.
Potros, okay. I don't have that R roll like you do. all right, cool. Let me see here. So I'm here with Eddie Potros. Eddie, tell us a little bit about your business.
Okay, so I'm a freelance designer, and I also work full-time, just like most people, most freelance designers. I also do development, and I actually do more than that, but for the sake of the interview today, I guess we'll keep it at web design and programming, front-end developer, I guess.
And what's your full-time gig?
I actually work with a company called Orbital Marketing, and I do all of their marketing, email marketing, website designs, logos, a bunch more, even graphic design, actually. So that's kind of my day-to-day job.
And one of the problems that you had presented to me was that, you know, you basically are freelancing kind of in your after hours. So does that typically mean like nights and weekends for you, or do you have kind of a flexible work schedule?
Well, it is very flexible, but it comes down to the nights and weekends, and not all nights, not all weekends as well.
So who's a typical client that would hire you, you know, outside of your normal 9-to-5?
Well, basically, I guess it would be people who I find through word of mouth, because I don't really advertise online that much, actually at all, if for that matter. So people who find me are usually word of mouth, you know, through friends or other clients that I've worked with. And, yeah, those are my clients pretty much.
And one of the problems you kind of brought to the table was in terms of, you know, not having enough time to pursue clients through multiple interactions. So one of the things that I kind of prescribe a lot of the times is to help designers build value is to increase the amount of interactions that you have in your sales process. And I have a specific kind of prescription for that. But one of the things you came back on was, you know, you don't have as much time with each of your individual customers to maybe string out a whole bunch of interactions. So tell me about a typical client interaction that you have. Like what are the different steps that you go through when somebody, you know, through word of mouth or whatever, reaches out and contacts you?
Okay, so let's say I call them or, you know, after they try to contact me, let's say one of them would want a website and try to get a meeting going so that way either by phone or by in person. It's most of the time in person because I find it works better. So I show them a bit of my work, just tell them about whatever I could do for them. This is after, you know, having already met and kind of been introduced. They tell me what they want or what they think they want, and I go about trying to solve their problem, you know, by, let's say, giving them a solution, which is, let's say, the steps I go through would be the initial meeting, the design, and then the development, and then putting the website live. This is, you know, if it was a website that we're talking about, most of the time it is for me. So these are kind of the steps I take to get a project from start to finish.
And do you find that on average you get paid enough for the work that you're doing?
Probably never. There was a few projects which I worked on and it turned out to be very fast that I finished them all in, like, you know, either a few hours or a few days, and those were the only ones that I found that I got paid very well. Other than that, some projects just tend to drag on for months, weeks or months, and those are the ones that I find, you know, I get paid a lot less at the end. So.
And I'm curious, a couple things. So one is why do you think those projects drag on a lot?
Most of the time is the, you know, response. Let's say I send a client design number one, for example, and by the time they send me the feedback, it's been like 3 weeks or a month, and this is me trying to either push for it or sometimes letting it go as is because I don't have that much time to, you know, call them right away and be like, hey, respond now because I need to finish this right now. because I also have either other clients or just my, you know, normal life to live, really. So that's where some things take on a lot longer to get done.
In terms of, like, so is it that the project ends up taking longer than you expected in actual man hours, or it's just more that the project gets spread out over a really long period of time?
I guess more along the time, the things where it spreads out, you know, longer. I haven't really put in more hours that much for projects. It might have been one or two, and, you know, I think everyone gets those once in a while. But most of the time, it's just project taking on longer, really.
So now, in terms of not getting paid enough, you know, that, in my mind, I think of, like, how many hours I'm putting in. Like, what does my hourly end up being, you know? What's been your impression of the projects you've taken on? Like, would you want those to be larger dollar value? And have you tried to charge more and you're just getting pushback from customers? I guess, how do you come up with your rates that you charge people?
Well, I base my rates on whatever I think I deserve. And I also shop around sometimes, you know, I find, like, you know, ask people, how much do you charge, and so on. And that kind of gives me an idea of how much I think I should charge. But the problem is that some clients just don't want to pay. I think everyone has those problems. And the minute I say, you know, I'm going to raise my prices next year, even if it was gradual increases, people start to look back and say, you know, well, this person offers me this much, you know, for this kind of project. And I always try to explain to them why I'm worth this much. But sometimes people always just want to pay the least amount. They don't really think of the final outcome. And sometimes it's come back to me where the, you know, client takes the project somewhere else, pays them, you know, that little amount, and then comes back to me and says, hey, they screwed up, can you fix it? And then that's when I charge them what I want. But that doesn't happen as often. It's usually where, you know, I tell them a price, and they kind of, even with the price, I tell them a range sometimes. And the range kind of tends to be a better way of going at it, but it, again, doesn't work out all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk to you about this because, you know, the article that I wrote, one of the things that I pinpoint in there is to have more interactions during your sales process. And it sounds like, you know, you kind of have this problem where you don't have that much time. You have a limited amount of time. Therefore, you're hesitant to have more interactions with somebody before you actually move forward on a project because you're kind of like, well, I only have, like, maybe one meeting that I can have with that client. But then at the same time, once you actually get the project, you find yourself in kind of a conundrum or a situation where you're maybe not getting paid at the rate that you want, that you really desire to get paid at. And then you also find yourself with projects that might not necessarily have been defined as well as you'd like them to, or the problems that you're trying to solve for the client are undefined because they came to you and asked for a website, and you tried to solve their problem by building them a website, which I tend to not do, which sounds kind of weird. But the idea that somebody comes to you and says, I want to have a website and I want these features, means that they have already done the research and have the knowledge to know exactly what they need to solve the problem that they're really trying to solve, which most business owners, when it comes to web, you know, they're not web designers. They're not online marketers. They're not online business builders. So for the average business owner to walk into a room and say, I need a website with, you know, feature 1, 2, and 3 is kind of insane because, you know, they don't really have the knowledge to know that, right? I mean, maybe you get some clients that do that, but it would be like me taking my car into the shop when the check engine light's on and telling the guy that I need, you know, an oil change or whatever. And, you know, he says, no, I've got to hook up my diagnostic tool and I need to go in there and, you know, have your car for maybe the next couple of days to run some tests before I can figure out what's wrong with your car and tell you actually what I can do for you. Yet, you know, in the web design space, a client comes in and says, I need a website with this feature, and this feature, we tend to just take their word for it and build them that thing. And one of the problems that I found over years of developing websites and building projects for clients was that the more I built exactly what they walked in and asked for, first of all, the less they were willing to pay me, and because then you're just building a commodity. They can take their scope of work or their requirements to 10 designers and get the exact same quote, or you know, or get the exact same work quoted out, but then the price is the differential there. The price is the thing that they're just going to go with the lowest common denominator. They're going to go with the cheapest price on the menu when that might not be the best thing for them. So one of the very first things that I do when I consult with web designers is tell them to get out of that one meeting scenario. Because when you meet with a client and you have that just that one meeting for an hour or 2 hours, the only thing that you really can get, the only discovery that you can do with that business owner is to pretty much ask them what they want, and then they tell you what they want, and then you can go and build a price for what they want. In 1 hour with somebody, or even 2 hours in one meeting, there's really not a whole lot more that you can do for that person. You can't really get to know their business and do the research that you need to do in order to figure out how to solve the problem that they really are having, which is to get more customers problem, right? I mean, every business that comes to you and asks for a website, they're trying to get more customers. I mean, maybe you find something different, but after doing this for 13 years, pretty much everybody that I talked to all had the exact same problem, which was, you know, how do I get more customers, more donors, more volunteers? And what they've done is they've made an assumption that they can have a website built with, you know, a contact form and their logo, and they can get more customers. And what ends up happening is if you build that for customers, that's when you get, you know, the projects for $500 or $1,000, because the price gets pushed down so low because all they're looking for is this specific scope of work, and you're the one that ends up having to kind of deal with that situation. If you took your sales process and instead of trying to force everything to happen in a single meeting, you maybe had 3 meetings with somebody. And the purpose of the multiple meetings is to force yourself into a model where you talk with the client about topic A for an hour. And then you have your second meeting with them and you talk to them about, you know, topic B for an hour. And topic A might be, hey, what's going on with your business? What do you need? Well, between meeting 1 and 2, you have this time to take what they've told you and then go do research and be able to come back to them in the second meeting with information that they may or may not have known. And this is where the real value gets built, is between these meetings and during these meetings, because what I end up being able to do is a client comes to me and says, I need a new website. You know, I need you to redesign it. I need you to design it on WordPress. And I ask why, and I, you know, you kind of get to the bottom of it. At the end of the day, they're trying to get more customers. Well, once you get them to, once you've kind of figured out that that really is their why, and you can then kind of walk away from that meeting knowing, hey, they need to get more customers. They're looking to do this online. Well, between meeting A and B, you can go and research their competition. So use Google and find their top 5 competitors. Maybe use some of the tools out there like SEMrush and SEO Moz, and start to look at what's actually going on in terms of the online landscape. Look at their competitors. Look at how many, you know, what their competitors are doing on Twitter, on Google, on Facebook. Look at what their competitors are doing in terms of advertising, not just organic, but advertising and social. And spend time understanding their competitors, and then you have another meeting where you spend time understanding their industry. And what ends up happening is instead of you trying to sell a website, you really start to sell this consultative service of helping them understand the online business that exists around their website versus you just talking about a website. Because, look, anybody nowadays can build a website. You know, you have a copy of you know, Dreamweaver or, you know, all the in-browser tools, or you can get a WordPress template or theme on ThemeForest, and you can build that stuff for nothing, you know. And it's like, if you only want to compete in the website space, you'll over the next 10 years, you know, the competition is just going to get more and more stiff. But because it's so easy to have a website, the need for businesses to have standout websites that actually, you know, meet the goals that they're trying to achieve, you know, the demand for that is ever more important, because there is, it is so easy to kind of get in and have a business and throw up a 5-page website. So there is a lot of traffic online, but there's also a huge amount of opportunity to differentiate yourself in from a brand perspective, and companies realize that. And so, you know, it's kind of a long-winded answer to kind of where you're at, but it's like, you know, designers all the time will tell me, well, I can't have 5 interactions with the client because I don't have time. But then you commit to a project that ends up taking forever and taking up all of your time, or you end up committing to a project where you get paid $50 an hour instead of $100 an hour, you know, or $100 an hour instead of $150 an hour. So there's this weird thing that I found, which was when I started spending more time with my client ahead of time, when I started investing in, and I say this in one of my sales courses, but I would have typically anywhere from 5 to 9 interactions with the client before we'd ever sign a proposal, sign a contract. And a lot of designers tell me, they're like, well, I don't have that kind of time. But it's so weird because, you know, what I found before that was that I would spend one meeting with a client because I would tell people I don't have time. And then I would spend 100 hours in a project getting paid for 30 hours worth of work. And that 70-hour differential was where I was losing my shirt. And my excuse was always the same thing. Well, I don't have time. But obviously, I mean, you're probably in that situation right now where you've got probably, I don't know how many projects you have on your plate right now, but you probably have a few projects that are taking up more of your time than you'd probably like them to. And there are things that you could have done on the sales side to maybe either get more money for those projects or to define a better set of requirements that would have helped you produce those projects either faster or in a shorter amount of time. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does. And, you know, you've made some good points here. While you were actually mentioning some of these things, I was kind of thinking of just like the things that you said here about having, you know, thinking in between the first and second meeting of ways that you can improve like their business and you know, search their competition. I mean, searching about their market and competition, how they are doing things, is all things that most of us do, I guess. But it is after that initial meeting, and like you said, you know, I'm one of those people that don't have that much time to actually, you know, drive 40 minutes or so to whatever the client may have their business at, you know, and have those meetings. But, you know, I guess it is something that I am able to change in order to have, you know, less hours, to work less hours on a project and actually make more money in the long run and help them actually achieve their business goals, which is, you know, more clients. But I do have a few things that I would like to maybe add and ask you about here.
Well, so, one before, and I want to hold you on that thought. I want to come back to that. One thing that you mentioned that I want to pay a little bit of time to, which is, you know, what is a meeting? What is an interaction? So I think that web pros should have several interactions with a prospective client over a period of time before they sign a deal with them. Partly because the more interactions you have with somebody over a period of time is going to build a stronger relationship for you. But those interactions can happen at any different level. So, you know, driving 40 minutes to meet with a client, that's a great first, you know, scheduled meeting if you want to do in person. But every meeting doesn't have to be in person. You know, once you've established that face-to-face contact, you can use a tool like GoToMeeting, you know, join me. There's a ton of Adobe Connect. There's a ton of online conferencing services that when you're talking about presenting your findings, it also depends how big the job is, right? If it's a big deal, if it's a 50 or 100,000 or whatever a big deal is to you, but if it's a big deal for you and it's worth driving out to that person's business 3 or 4 times, then that makes sense. But if not, you know, some of those interactions can happen over the phone. Some of those interactions can happen via screencast. So, you know, one of the things I found was always interesting was whenever I'd go meet with a client, that first meeting, right? And in the typical, I call it the status quo pitch, where you go meet with that client, you talk for an hour, and you get to this place in that meeting where you say, well, you know, I think I could potentially help you. So I'm going to go make a proposal. And it's like this really easy thing to just blurt out and say. Or the client might say, well, I'd like you to build, you know, I'd like you to give me a proposal for what I asked for, right? And it's just a very natural step in that initial meeting. And that's it. Then you go home, you create a proposal, you email it over, you try to chase the client down and figure out what's going on, and you have no idea because you've only had one interaction. You know, they're having that same interaction with a dozen other companies because that's efficient for them to go out and have a dozen meetings with a dozen different companies and to get a dozen proposals. Well, where you start to break that model down is when they get to the end of a meeting and they like you. They like what you're saying. They like what you're asking. They like your portfolio. It seems like you're a good fit. And they say, you know what, I'd like to have a proposal. And my response became, you know what, I'm not ready to give a proposal yet. There's still some information that I want to gather, but it does sound like we could be a good fit. So what I'd love to do is I'd love to schedule another meeting in a couple of days. It's going to give me some time to take my notes that I've looked at today, kind of distill them down, and then move to the next step of my discovery process, which is all about looking at your competitive landscape. And then the next step is looking at your industry. And the next step is looking at some different strategies to help grow your business, right? So you have some of these meetings planned out. It's not like you're just making this stuff up. But all of your competitors will be telling the client, well, I'm going to get you back a proposal. And the one thing that you're going to be saying is, you know, I'm not ready to give you a proposal yet. I haven't done enough work with you. And that's so different because a lot of people rush to the proposal stage. I know I used to. I used to always try to see how fast I could get a proposal to a customer after I met with them the first time. And what I found was that, you know, I wasn't building any relationships. I wasn't actually digging in deep enough to people's businesses to give them solutions that were worth the money that I wanted to charge. Now, I was giving them solutions that were worth what my competitors were charging, but I always wanted to be able to charge more, and I had to figure out how to do that. And the only way that you're ever going to be able to charge more is if you're in a situation where you've set yourself apart from your competition. So I'd love to circle back around to some of those points and questions that you had, but I just wanted to hone in on that idea of, you know, is it always worth it to drive out and meet somebody, or what is an interaction? So that can take a lot of different shapes, and I just wanted to make sure that we hit on that point.
Okay, well, you kind of answered one of them. I was kind of going to get to the point of you know, answering when the client tells you how much. And a lot of the clients want that answer on that first meeting. Typically, what I do is I just tell them, you know, let me do some more research on your market and see exactly what I think I can build for you or do for you to help you grow business. And then that's when I answer them. And it's usually a phone call, either the same day later or the next morning or something like that. I guess just going into another question, because that one I guess you kind of touched on, unless you want to add to it.
Yeah, so the how much question, the budget question, again, very, very responsible to have the money conversation. There is no one time to have the money conversation. The money conversation is a continuous, iterative conversation. It doesn't make sense to talk to somebody that's not in your ballpark. So if you produce projects for, let's say, your typical project is between $500 and $5,000, and that's if you looked at your last 10 projects and you said, look, where did my projects fall? You know, and that's pretty much your working range, right? Chances of you grabbing a project that's going to be, 10 times that range of, let's say, your highest project you've done in the last 12 months is $5,000. Chances of you going out and getting a $50,000 project is probably, you know, maybe it'll happen, but most likely you're going to work within that range. So to say to a client, my typical project is somewhere between this much money and this much money. At this point, I don't have enough information to give you a specific price. But if you're not in that range, then it probably doesn't make sense for us to continue talking. That kind of a sentence could be said in the first 10 minutes talking to somebody. It's not dishonest. You're not leading them astray. But you're also not telling them how much their project is going to be. Because that's the danger you get in. Somebody says, I need a website. It's going to be 30 pages. It's going to include a contact form. It's going to have a blog. It's going to have, you know, I need to be on first page of Google. How much is that going to cost? And if your response is, well, that's going to be $8,000, and then you get into it, and it turns out that what they actually wanted is a lot bigger than you said, all of a sudden you're anchored to this initial price that you gave. And that's really the danger there. But the other danger is that you spend 8 or 9 meetings with somebody and they have a $500 budget, and you, your minimum to have that many meetings and that much commitment ahead of a sale is to be at least in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. Well, then you've kind of gotten yourself into a situation. So talk about budget a lot right away. Put it out in front of them and say, look, here's the typical project that we work with. It's somewhere in between this price and this price. If that is, you know, if that works for you, then the next step is to figure out where in that spectrum you are. And then from there, it's about figuring out, you know, how we get to that price, you know, how we get to that level of a website, or are we the right provider for you? You know, so giving them that range and then telling them, hey, look, I've got to go on a journey with you. You know, one of the things I used to say to people pretty much right away was, if we're talking about a full website project, then that's going to be somewhere in the ballpark of $10,000 to $30,000. Where in that range you fit, I have no idea. I can give you an example of a couple of projects that cost in that $25,000 to $30,000 range. I can give you a couple of examples of projects that were in that $10,000 range. But if you have $3,000 for your website project, then I'm happy to talk to you for 10 or 15 minutes to figure out who I can refer you to. But chances of me being able to produce a project for $3,000, it just doesn't work. For me to start the engine to have the 5-person team or the 10-person team that I have to work on that type of project, it just doesn't make financial sense. So, you know, you have to be able to have a very honest conversation around budget. But what it can't be is it can't be this relationship where your client is just price hungry and all they're doing is price shopping. And there's so many reasons why one would want to price shop. Because maybe they had a harebrained idea that in the middle of the night they decided they wanted to build a new website and they want to know how much it is. You know, so very much like going to Amazon to see, you know, how much a new, you know, laptop or a new tablet is going to be, you know, just because you're curious, right? Well, the problem is in the service business, curiosity of our clients leads to you doing a whole bunch of work. And that's what you're really trying to avoid, is you don't want to have 6 or 7 meetings with somebody when all they really wanted was to figure out how much, right? Like, because that's not what you want. You want serious buyers. And serious buyers are going to engage in as many meetings as you want to engage in order to get the best product. Non-serious buyers are going to want to have a 30-minute conversation with you and get a price.
Okay. That's actually some really good info here, especially about giving them, you know, that first 10 minutes and you know, just telling them what you think you should be charging them, or at least, you know, for your past projects, and showing them, say, hey, you know, this is how much I built this website for, type of thing, and you would fit in this range maybe, or the other range. And so this is kind of actually a very good point for me to try to implement.
And Eddie, make sure when you're doing that, that you're not allowing the conversation to end there. So somebody says, how much, I want to find out how much I'm going to build a website for, and to be able to say, look, in the past it's between this range and this range, you know, but let's start figuring that out. And in order to do that, I need to schedule, you know, my first discovery meeting with you. And my process usually takes, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 to 6 or 8 or 10 meetings to figure out what exactly we need to build for you, because I don't just build stuff for the sake of building, and I'm not going to be the person that just competes for the lowest possible price to build a project. So always make sure that you address the budget question, talk about, and then take that question and lead it into you trying to actually do discovery and trying to work through your process. Don't allow the conversation to end on budget as kind of a full stop.
All right. Okay, so there's a couple of questions here that I wanted to address, and I'll kind of leave one of them to the end if it's okay. So one of the things is, usually the clients, you know, they want to grow their business, and they think that by being first in Google, that solves everything. So whenever, let's say, I met someone who's a car dealership owner, and he wants to build a car dealership website, so people can search on their site, you know, and find out the prices and the info about that stuff. But they also want it to be first in Google. So when they put Honda Accord, you know, 2006, they want that to show first. And a lot of them tend to not want to spend any money on advertising. And so I'm not really sure how I would bring that, especially being a one-person team. You know, I'm not really working with anyone that I haven't found many people that I could work with, just because, you know, schedules are tight and, you know, there isn't, you know, always time to meet new people that you can work with, you know, SEO specialist or, you know, back-end developer. But these are some of the issues I go with. I find also when meeting people and trying to figure out what I should be, you know, giving them as a package, for example.
Sure. So the problem that I think you're looking at here is a very common problem for a lot of web professionals, and that's the I want to be on the first page of Google problem, but I don't want to spend any money to get there. So that's an unrealistic expectation that a client is going to spend, right? So if he says, I don't want to spend any money on advertising, but I also want to be on the first page of Google, those two statements, they don't line up. It's virtually impossible to get to a relevant competitive keyword term and get there without investing a large amount of money. Because the fact is that their competitors, that car dealer's competitors, are investing money to be at number one. Whoever's number one, they didn't get there by accident. So now, that's a great opportunity. A client comes to you with that as a setup, and you now have probably the easiest platform to get to their true problem that they're trying to communicate to you. Because see, what they're doing is they're not coming to you with a need. They're coming to you with really a symptom that they want to be number one, but they don't want to spend any money to get there, which means they have no idea what the value of number one in Google for a top-ranked, top-competitive term means to their business. And let me rephrase this. If you look up the term website proposal, our company is number one. If you Google that, of course I'm Googling it right now just to check. So if you Google website proposal, YouGurus comes up as the number one position. Now, I can go in and I can probably run some numbers in our analytics program, and because we track that kind of stuff. And I can tell you probably within 30 minutes of me running into our analytics algorithm or system, and I can basically run some reports, and I could tell you over the last 12 months what that number one position has financially made my company. So that's information that I have about my business and what the value of a number one position means. So if I wanted to become number one position for a relevant term that's going to give me actual customers, I know that there's going to be a return on that investment, and I would be happy to pay for that to happen. Because that's business. There's no business person out there in the entire world that if you went into their business and said, I can get you this many customers, and it's going to cost you this much, and within a certain level of certainty, let's say 10 or 15%, I can basically guarantee that this is going to happen. There is no business owner in their right mind, if that equation is net positive, like me being number one position for that term website proposal, if that yields a certain dollar amount per year, I am willing to spend pretty much up to a really close amount of money to what my total net profit on that amount of revenue is going to be in order to get that revenue. And that's just business, right? And I think anybody would understand that. A car dealer would understand that. A flower shop owner is going to understand that. A restaurant's going to understand that. So when a client comes to you with the number one Google problem, I'm not number one or I want to be number one, and they're not willing to spend any money to get there, that means they fundamentally don't understand the value proposition that you're potentially providing them. So they're really not coming to you wanting to be number one on Google. That's the first thing that you have to understand. And what I mean by that is they're coming to you and they want more customers. So what you have to do is you have to deconstruct the request, the symptom, the thing that they're coming and asking you for, which is, I want to be number one in Google. You have to take that and you have to basically, you know, dissolve it into what it really is. He basically came to you and said, you know, Eddie, I need more customers. And I have a hypothesis about how I can get more customers. My hypothesis is, I want to be number one on Google. But because he has no evidence on how many customers being number one in Google is going to give him, he has no idea what that hypothesis is worth. Therefore, he's not willing to spend any money to get there. So once you understand that he's really trying to just get more customers, it changes the conversation, because there's a whole heap of potential tests that you could run, a potential hypothesis that you could run online in order to help him get more customers. Maybe it's, how do we get you to be number one for the term Honda Accord? Now, you could run some very easy tests to figure out how much it's going to cost to get to number one in Honda Accord. And you can show him that. And that's why you have to have multiple interactions with him, because you need to sit down with him and you need to pull up, you know, Google AdWords pricing estimator, and you need to look at what people are currently paying out of pocket for pay-per-click traffic, because that's going to tell you a little bit about how much those leads are worth. If there's a company out there that's willing to pay $10 per click for pay-per-click traffic, and that's $10 not per lead, but per click, and you can figure out that at every click you get, you're going to get maybe 20% conversion on clicks to actually fill out a lead form, then you can basically say, look, we need to get 5 clicks per lead that we want. Well, that means we're going to have to spend $50 per lead. Well, a car dealership's going to know very, very quickly whether or not they're willing to spend $50 per lead. A lot of car dealerships would be happy to spend $50 per lead, because they might already be spending $100 per lead in other areas. So what happens is you have to put, first of all, take that, like I said, take the conversation, dissolve it down to the core, and figure out what he's really asking. And he's asking for the more customers problem. He wants you to solve the more customers problem. Then the second step is to educate him around why solving more customers through the number one position in Google, what that really means to his business. How much is that going to equate to? Because you can run some Google, there's plenty of tools out there that can estimate the organic search. So if somebody's paying $10 per click through Google pay-per-click, but there's 1,000 clicks per month that are available through organic search, then that means that that's $10,000 worth of traffic that's available every single month through organic SEO for that specific keyword. Now, I'm just pulling out numbers here, but you have to understand that this is where you start to build the value. Say, look, if we want to be number one in Google for that term, then we should be willing to invest up to $10,000 per month to target that term, because that's what it's worth. That's what it's worth in terms of the equivalent pay-per-click spend. And so this is where it gets interesting. If the guy says, look, well, I'm not willing to spend $10,000 per month. Well, you can say, well, look, then let's start with the pay-per-click, because we can't be number one for organic without spending 10 grand a month. But what we could do is we could spend $500 on Google pay-per-click, and we could see how much of that traffic actually converts into a customer. And what happens at that point is kind of something magical, because you can actually start to test things with smaller budgets. And you can say, look, if we're able to convert traffic on $500 a month on driving 50 clicks per month, and we are able to test to figure out how many clicks we need to get a valid lead, then we can figure out how much per lead it costs to get through your website. It's going to tell him a huge array of the potential value of online. So this is why I say, you know, you can't have one 60-minute meeting with somebody, because you can't, there's no possible way that in 60 minutes with somebody you can know enough about their business, enough about their pains, objectives and goals, and be able to educate them enough about what it is that you do and what it is that their business, their online business, is trying to do online. There's just no way. There's no way you can do that in one meeting. You know, you have to have that 3, 4, 5, 6 interactions with somebody to be able to do, you know, figure out what their top pain is, to be able to present them with information and educate them about what they're really trying to get to, and to be able to then build value and sell them on the solution that you've basically presented to solve their problems. It's just fundamentally impossible. Now, what you can do in 60 minutes is have him come to you and say, I want a website, and I want to be number one in Google, and I don't want to pay any money. And then you go create a proposal to somehow try to accomplish that, in which he's going to look at that proposal and not understand how it's going to get from point A to point B, and he's going to come and tell you that you're too expensive. And then if you do get hired, you're almost guaranteed to fail at the real core objective that he's actually trying to hire you for. Now, you might end up building him a website for a couple $1,000s, and he might end up getting a lead or two on it, but then he's going to sit there wondering to himself, you know, why you didn't get him to number one on Google, and eventually he'll be dissatisfied, or he'll just, you know, realize that, you know, it wasn't a good investment to begin with, which isn't good for either you or him.
Well, you know, Brent, this is actually some valuable points as well here. And I think you might have only missed my second part of that question, which was, you know, working in a team of just me. So how actually, I mean, I think a lot of people are teaming up with other developers or, you know, SEO specialists and whatnot to try and find out how they can actually finish a project, first of all, you know, in a speedy manner. And also, you know, basically, you know, I don't know everything in this, in the web design to, you know, SEO and all the different things here. So I have to probably ask people to get things done for me. And, you know, this is where, again, it comes to, becomes another problem because, you know, I mean, outsourcing work is great and, you know, sometimes it's very beneficial, probably most of the time, but it is taking away some of that budget that was put aside by the client. And, you know, not every client understands that, you know, certain things cost a certain amount. And this is where I don't know some of these things. Let's say, you know, when a client comes to me and asks me, you know, if they want to be first on Google, I can't really just answer them even after maybe the second or third meeting because I haven't found someone that I could talk to, a SEO specialist, that would let me know what kind of budget I'm looking at, or at least to make me understand, or the client understand what the costs of these things might be. So how would you work with something like this, where, you know, it's just a one-person team?
Okay, so in terms of you're a one-person team and you need to figure out how to source experts to be able to solve these problems. So, you know, one thing, you know, I'll mention is that if you're not prepared to be able to solve a problem that your client is presenting you, you really are at kind of a crossroads. You can either, you know, basically tell them, yeah, no problem, and basically sign some kind of deal with them, and then go try to figure out how to fulfill those services. Or you can basically make the realization that it's not a good fit type of thing, or I guess, and so that's, and refer them out to somebody else. Or I guess then there's option number three, which is, if you believe that there's a problem that your clients need help solving, then you've got to basically go and learn how to do that thing. So you can either, one, hire somebody else to do it and sub it out to them, two, refer it out to somebody else and just take an affiliate or a referral fee off of that, or three, learn how to do the stuff yourself. I think in terms of, you know, when you're sitting in front of a customer and they want something and you don't necessarily know how to do it, that's probably a good time to be pretty honest with that customer and say, hey, look, I'm not exactly sure how we would go about doing this. I have some general idea, but I'm going to need some time to figure that out, and basically bring in a partner company, or, you know, go do a little bit of research and then convince your customer to take a chance with you on basically offering them a service that you're not fully up to speed on. Typically, at least in my situation, I never really sold anything that I didn't have a pretty good idea of what the general cost framework was going to be for that. Now, there were plenty of situations where maybe I took a guess, and just took the business, knowing that I really wanted to be able to offer that service, and then we went and figured out how to make it happen after the fact. But that's probably not a very good approach to take, because you could end up kind of holding the bag with a big obligation to your clients. In terms of building a network, I mean, you know, I could introduce you to 3 SEO companies that you could potentially work with, you know, right after this call. It's a matter of being prepared to have that conversation with your client about what it would potentially take to get them to number one position in Google, just so that they understand it, because it doesn't make sense for you to go out and find a company to help you with SEO if the customer fundamentally doesn't understand that they're going to have to make an investment to make that happen.
Okay, that makes sense. Actually, I think my last question here was about having like many projects at once. The issue with that is, you know, let's say I have a client that I'm working with, and all of a sudden they just, you know, stop replying or take forever to reply. And that's when I get someone else at the same time, you know, comes to me and says, hey, you know, I'm looking for somebody to build my website and help me grow my business and attract more customers. So in the meantime, while I'm waiting for my other client, I, you know, go on and take this project, or even if it's little projects here and there. And then, you know, here I am, you know, juggling multiple things. And especially when all of them come at the same time and they want updates to the site or, you know, major things, even the little things, but when it's all at once, that becomes a big issue for me, trying to, you know, work with multiple projects at once here. And the way I go about this is actually just by, you know, let's say doing something for someone and sending them, let's say, a variation of an update, and having them reply, so I kind of put the weight on them, on their side. So by the time they get back to me, I try to get, you know, the other project going. But it hasn't always worked out the best, and I'm not really sure what would be the best way.
Sure. So essentially, you're in a place where your projects have no structure. You basically start working on something, you get to a point where you finish your work, you need to have client input on what you should be doing next. You send that work to your client to basically say, hey, look, I need to get feedback, or I need something from you, and you have no expectation on when they have to get that information back to you. So you basically go into, kind of follow-up hell, or you end up, you know, they take, you know, you want them to take 3 days, but they end up taking 2 weeks, you know, and this is a little bit about how you manage the operations side of your business, which the problem that you're talking about is insanely common. Like, I did it for years. I mean, I almost enjoyed, you know, the projects where my clients are taking a long time to get back to me, because then I knew I could work on other billable work or whatever, and just, I, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I didn't mind it. And it creates all sorts of problems. One, the drag-along project that you talked about earlier, the one that kind of, the never-ending project, just kind of keeps going and going. And you know, I've had projects go, I think our longest project was a $5,000 website. And after 5 years, it never got finished. I mean, 5 years of checking in, trying to restart the project, getting the client to commit, blah, blah, blah. And then we'd go, you know, she'd be like, okay, I'm going to work on this, and I'll email you as soon as I'm done with it. And then a week would go by, and 2 weeks would go by, and then I would actually get to the point where I would say, you know what? Like, mentally, I was like, I got so much other stuff going on. I really don't care about that project anymore. And the problem there is just that we lacked a structure for completing projects on time, and we lacked the expectation setting with our customers to get those projects completed on time. So here are the two tricks that I'm going to teach you, basically, of how we solve those problems. The first is that every project has a weekly standing meeting. So there's only one time that you get feedback from a client on something, and that's during your weekly standing meeting. So if you take on a project and let's say it's a website build, basically for the duration of that project, every week, same time, same place, you know, go-to meeting or whatever. It's non-negotiable. It's part of the contract. You have a meeting every single week until that project's complete. What that does is it gives you a structure to basically assign tasks, get feedback, and make sure that you're on schedule to complete the project. It does not allow room for multiple weeks to all of a sudden disappear without your client getting back to you or returning what they need. So that's one thing. So the weekly standing meeting, and we've tried dozens of different tactics to get client to get projects to not peel out of control. And the weekly standing meeting was probably the only thing that actually fundamentally kept us on track, because it gave us a platform to hold our clients accountable and for our clients to hold us accountable, because we had to give them an update and we had to tell them why we did get what they asked us to get done within that time, or for us to hold the client accountable for getting us what we needed on time at that point. And also gave us a space that every week we knew we had that 30 minutes to show them the recent designs and get feedback. So that's the one thing, the weekly standing meeting. The other thing is that you need to have a clause in your contract, and you need to not just have the clause there, but you need to verbally go over it with your client, and you need to have basically a return of materials or a return of feedback term in your proposals. Ours was 72 hours. That meant that any asset that we gave a client and we wanted feedback on, we had to have that feedback within 72 hours. Otherwise, we charged a penalty on the project, and the project was now taken off of our schedule, and there was a restart fee in order to start the project up again. So, and this was one of those times where I, over the years, I basically learned that when we sign a contract with a customer, that there's a conversation that happens around that contract. We sit down and we say, look, you know, we're really excited about your project. We're really looking forward to working with you, but we need to do some housekeeping first, and we need to run through how this is going to work. So before they ever give you a check, you make sure that they understand that if at any time they don't return your designs, the feedback, the content, whatever you assign them within 72 hours or whatever your time frame is, that you're basically going to charge them a fee in order to do that, and you're going to have a credit card on file to make sure that you can do that at any time you need to. So those are the two things that worked for me really well. One is the weekly standing meeting, and the other one is the return time frame. And then if they don't meet that time frame, then you have some type of an unscheduling contract fee and a restart fee. And all you're trying to do there is say, look, I know that unplanned interruptions happen. I know that you could be working on this. We could be working on this project together, and maybe a conference comes up. Maybe it's a big deal that you're pursuing comes up. Maybe it's your cousin's getting married. Whatever it is, it's totally cool with us. We have no hard feelings about that. But if you're going to prioritize that other thing over me, then you're going to pay a fee to do that, because I'm blocking out my calendar. I'm hiring resources to be available for your project. And if at any time you basically decide that you have other priorities that are more important than me, then I just need to be able to be compensated for the interruption to my workflow that that's going to create for me. And when you have that conversation with the prospective customer, it's very natural, because you're like, doesn't that make sense? Because if you basically make it to where I can't take on the next project, you're affecting my ability to make a living, so I just need to be compensated for that time. Those two things, when you implement them, it's going to do wonders for your project process, because it's going to totally change the relationship with how your customers view you. Once you say, look, we're going to have a weekly meeting, there's structure. Customers love structure. They love to see a plan in place. They love to see progress. What they don't love is to go away for 3 weeks and be guilty because you're not guiding them along the process. What they don't love is for you to be designing something and for you to not talk to them for 6 weeks because you're juggling so many projects that you just can't get the thing done that you told them that you're going to get done, and you've left it very open-ended. So clients love structure. Clients also love expectations. So those are the two things that, if you implement those two things, I think it's going to solve that problem. If not, it's going to definitely reduce the pain of that in your projects.
Well, thank you, Brent. Actually, those were two really good points here. I like the one about the penalty on the feedback. That sounds like definitely something I could do and I should be doing. And the weekly meetings, I mean, this is one thing where it may and may not work exactly for me. I mean, maybe every 2 weeks, it doesn't have to be weekly. But it is something to think about at least, so that way, you know, I can get the project on time, done on time, and have just more feedback in general for me and from the client.
And I would urge you as strong as I can to make it weekly. Human beings, anything outside of really a week or a day is not a period of time that we're programmed to deal with. In terms of, if you think about how people work for 5 days or 6 days, and then they take a day of rest. And this idea of weekends and reset and then starting the next week is, it's insanely powerful. And if you look at the idea of like a month, every month has a different amount of days. Every month starts on a different day and ends on a different day of the week. So when you start to put things in terms of months, months really don't matter, like in terms of somebody's schedule. It's hard to say I'm going to work on this for a month because it could be the month of December, or it could be during spring break, or it could be you know, the month has 5 weeks instead of 4 weeks. So be careful to do anything that's outside of a weekly rhythm. Once you have a project and you have a client, and I know you've got a day job, and that's the thing that you're balancing, and that's always going to be a fight for you, is where your personal business lands in terms of priority with your day job. And that's something that's a whole other conversation. But I would really urge you that if you take on a project, to build everything in terms of weeks. Because, you know, and to get a weekly rhythm, because and maybe it's an after-hours weekly meeting with your client, and you just explain to them, look, this is a freelance job, and I work in the evenings and weekends, and so for me, if you want to hire me and get a better price because I'm basically doing evenings and weekends and I'm not a full agency, then I have to be able to work at Thursday at 6 p.m. Or you go to your employer and you say, you know, I'm going to work an extra 2 hours on Tuesdays so I can get 2 hours off on Thursdays, and then I can basically meet every week on Thursday at like 4 o'clock or whatever it is, so that it aligns better with your client if you're trying to keep that image that you're not doing this in your spare time. So whatever it is, I just, in my practice, setting up my life in terms of weekly rhythms has always worked better. It's either a weekly or a daily rhythm. Those things that I have to do monthly, I really only want to do a couple of those things, because it's very difficult to keep in a monthly rhythm on anything that you do, because there's scheduling problems. You have to, like, instead of being, you know, if you were to do a meeting every month or every other week, like, it's just, it starts to push out that the rhythm piece, and it becomes challenging, because what will end up happening is if you're meeting every other week, but the week that you end up meeting is on like a holiday week, then that could potentially, you know, completely throw off your rhythm to where you might go 3 or 4 weeks before you meet again, you know, taking December or something like that as an example. So it's easier to plan around a weekly rhythm than it is a biweekly rhythm. So just my experience with that, something to watch out for.
So I guess by meetings, you're talking about like little short meetings, because I mean the longer ones always tend to be unproductive.
Correct. So a standing project meeting, you typically want to make that 30 minutes or less. So depending on what you have going on in your project, you could potentially allow that meeting to go longer. But if you're talking about a standing project meeting to check in every week about a project, basically what you're doing is you're kind of following an agile methodology. You're basically saying, every week I'm going to come to you with my victories and my challenges, and I'm going to assign my tasks. So you're going to come in and say, hey, we just finished the web design, and I want to show that to you for 10 minutes, and then I'm going to tell you the couple things that I had in terms of challenges, and then I'm going to assign tasks. So you want to keep that meeting as brief as possible on a regular basis. So it might only be, I mean, I've had standing meetings. Currently I'm doing a weekly standing meeting with my blog editor, right? So she's got a project, which is to help us manage our blog. And every week we check in, and we at least have we at least talk about her top challenges and her victories for that previous week, and so that I have a good pulse on what she's delivering. And like today, for example, that meeting was 10 minutes. Last week, we were doing a training, and so the meeting ended up going like 40 or 50 minutes, and because it was more than we could do in 30 minutes, right? So you kind of have to gauge how long you spend with your customer at that point. But the idea is that most of the time a project meeting, it's going to be really quick. It's going to be, here's what we got accomplished this week. Here's your assignment. I want to make sure that you have this material. If you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, I need to get it back by this time. It just basically gives you that framework to have that conversation, to continuously be setting expectations with your client, and to make sure that those projects don't go on for, I mean, you know, it's so easy to just let something ride for 6 weeks. Or 10 weeks, or 12 weeks. It's easy to put something that somebody needs to do in the back of their head and just forget about it for like an extended period of time. And that's where you get those projects that just go 6 months overdue. Like, you're like, how could this project, it was supposed to take 2 months and it's taken 8 months. Like, how is that physically possible to happen? And it's because people just basically forget about it and they don't have that regular structure.
All right. That definitely would help me at least, solve some of these issues that I have here. And you pointed out some really good things. I'm not sure, do we have time for one more thing? Or?
Yeah, I got time for one more question.
All right. So I guess my other question here is, having a few hours a week to work on something, I've always had that problem. I do way too much things. I mean, I do design development. I do DJing, I do music mixing and video and photography. So I have all these things that I do, and it's been a challenge trying to keep just one thing and stick with it, because I always prefer to do everything, and not have to, let's say if it's especially something for myself, my own website, you know, I want to do the photography for some of the things that I advertise. Or, it'd be the graphic design stuff for it. So basically, my biggest problem is finding the time to get these things done. And especially if it's, more than just my own stuff, having clients on along the side. So, I mean, I know it's a kind of a big subject here, but I was hoping for some pointers on this.
Sure. I mean, you're going to find that you're going to have a fundamental problem with, succeeding at what you're doing unless you make a decision to focus. So that focus is a very powerful word, because we could take focus in terms of a big slice, like you need to focus on one technology or one service or one aspect of a service, or we could take the term focus and we could reposition that and say you need to focus on a market, or focus on a specific customer, or a focus on a specific type of customer acquisition. Somewhere in your business right now, you're feeling, anytime I ever feel like spread out or spread too thin, or that I have a little bit of chaos going on in my world and it's not adding up to the value and the impact I want in the world, I always know the one problem there, and that's that I'm not focusing enough. So you'll have to make a decision in your business. It sounds like you're kind of saying yes to everything. Like, you're a creative person. So what is it that you really want to do? Do you want to just kind of be a creative person and express your creativity in a variety of different form factors? Or do you want to, build a successful business and, build wealth in your life? Or do you want to become the best there ever was at one thing? Because that will never happen if you're focusing, if you're looking at everything and saying yes to everything. The people are usually measured more by what they say no to than what they say yes to. If you look in terms of, Apple as a company, for example, they say no to a lot of stuff. They say no to 50 different versions of the iPhone. They say no to licensing their operating system out to other different technology manufacturers and stuff like that. They say no to building things that they don't fully understand and aren't available to innovate and truly make a dent in the universe, right? So they say no to a lot of stuff, and what we see is a very polished and fine-tuned product. Other companies make the kind of yes to everything decision, and you don't really see those types of companies really rising to the top. But I think for you as a person, though, it's more important for you to maybe look at all the services that you can do, and instead of saying I can do everything, focus into one thing. And it's challenging, right? Because saying no to something is like turning away opportunity, right? You're like all of a sudden like, oh, but now I can't do that thing anymore because I'm saying no to it, but because I want to do this other thing, you know. And so it's almost counterintuitive. By saying no to opportunity and no to those types of things, we almost feel the natural sense is that we're limiting ourselves and we're not going to reach our potential. But it's the exact opposite of what really happens, right? If you were to focus only on your DJing, you would get opportunities in DJing that you wouldn't get if you were focusing on DJing, web design, web development, online marketing, search, etc. Because if you just did DJing, you would be looking for tons more opportunities to help DJing become the focal point of your life. If you were just doing photography, you would be seeing opportunities that you would not currently be seeing because you have no focus, right? You're looking so broad that you can't really see all of the opportunities that exist right around you for photography to make that something that, you know, brings you into the success that you want. So, you know, the only answer that I have in terms of your time situation is it gets even more extreme for where you're at because you don't have, it's not that you don't even, you're not even doing your own thing as a full-time thing. So the focus problem is just magnified, right? If you're doing design and code and photography and DJing between the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. every night and, you know, 8 to 5 on the weekends, I mean, it's just not enough time to make that a successful part of your business. It can be a hobby. You can keep lots of hobbies. People have lots of hobbies, right? But you have to maybe accept the fact that you're never going to be, you know, an award-winning person in any of those categories because you're not, you know, fully committing into one of those areas. So, you know, it comes back to kind of a personal choice. Like, where do you want to be with what you're doing? You know, do you want to be the best DJ in Canada, or do you want to be the best DJ in your city, or do you want to do it because you have fun, right? I mean, it's again, it's back to those types of questions you have to ask yourself, and there's no wrong answer. And I want to make sure that I'm not coming across and saying that there is a right answer to any of these questions. It's just a matter of, you know, what's the reality of that stuff that's going to happen. I've known a lot of friends that have, been designers or developers, and they've been doing it in a freelance capacity, and they've asked me on multiple occasions, well, how do I turn this into a full-time thing? And you know, there's a lot of different ways you could make that happen, but at the end of the day, it can't happen if you have another full-time thing. So if you want to become, like if you want your freelance practice to be your full-time job where you've got super flexible hours, instead of working for one person, you've got 30 or 40 clients that fund your life, and you can work with who you want to work with, and you're not tied down to a job, right? If you want that to happen, eventually you'll have to leave the other thing to make that happen. Now, there's a variety of different ways that could happen. It could happen through, you know, moving to part-time at your current job. It could happen by, just leaving your job if you have enough business to support yourself. You could get a loan. You could ask, you know, friends and family for money to help bridge the gap between your full-time job and your freelance business. Whatever the means are, the end still has to be. If you want to become a full-time freelancer, eventually you have to be able to do freelance full-time. You can't do that with a job. You can't do that with something else that's taking up that amount of time. So I know I probably went a little bit off topic and down some tangents there, but those concepts of focus, it's two things. I'll summarize the two things. One is focus. You've got to start saying no. In order for you to probably feel the success that you want in any of your creative areas, you're going to have to write down all of your stuff that you like to do, and you're going to have to say, you know what, maybe for the next 6 months I only do this one thing. I only design, or I only do photography, or I only do DJing, and mark everything else off. And for that period of time, you give yourself that space, because the success is only going to happen when you create that void. So the first thing is focus, and the second thing is the void. In order to do something, you have to create space for it. if you have no space to build your business, if you're trying to build your business in the wee hours of the night, it's going to be very difficult because the business doesn't have the space to grow. It's like planting a tree, right? You have to create space for that tree to grow. If you plant a tree and there's, you know, it's in the middle of a bunch of other trees or it's right next to another tree, it's not going to grow. The other tree is going to soak up all of its nutrients. You have to go out and find a space. You have to, you know, measure out a certain area around to know where the tree is going to go so that over the next 20 years it can grow in and fill into that space. So just to kind of, like I said, to summarize, focus on stuff, say no, and then build that space, that void for that thing that you want to do, and that's really the only way that's going to happen.
All right. I think that was a good answer. I mean, definitely, it is difficult for me trying to do all these different things, and I guess it's okay in a way because I'm not trying to be the best DJ or the best designer. I'm always just trying to do a little bit of each because, you know, I want to make extra income, and I love all these things that I do, and, you know, it helps that I'm good at a lot of these things. You know, I'm not the best, but, you know, if I can do it and people are liking it, and I'm liking it more than anything, really, that's what kind of made me keep going with all these different things. But, yeah, having less time is just, you know, keeps adding and adding to my schedule, and, you know, some of these things are going to eventually have to go away, like my photography.
Schedules, just like accounting, it's a zero-sum game, right? Nobody, at the end of the day, if you know, accounting, when you look at your books, how much money you made and how much money you spent, it's a zero-sum game. If you spent more money than you made, the money that you spent, it came from some place. So accountants always talk about how accounting is a zero-sum game. At the end of the day, everything always adds up. If you follow the money, there's always... everything has to add up at some level. The same thing goes with your calendar. When it comes to, you know, you adding one more service or one more thing that you do and that you have to learn how to do, or one more client or one more project, that time comes from someplace. So there's always a trade-off. As you start to do more and to commit to more, eventually that time's coming from someplace. That time might be coming from your personal time. It might be coming from the time that you've spent with a girlfriend or a wife or a sibling or a husband or a brother or whatever, right? So eventually, as you commit to more stuff, you know, it's not like the world is inventing any more time anytime soon. You know, there's no extra day. There's no extra hour that's being added to the day. So always think of your time in that term, that they're never making many more of it. And so when you commit to, you know, that other thing, that means that there's something else that you're not doing. And from personal experience, I went through that with, I used to do a ton of philanthropy work and I ran my business. And I realized that I basically was sacrificing part of my business and I was sacrificing some of my personal relationships in order to do my philanthropy projects. But I just kept saying yes to every single philanthropy project that came my way and every volunteer project that I did. And I just kind of had this feeling of, you know, abundance. But then, you know, these little cracks started kind of showing themselves in terms of my personal relationships and my own personal health. And so I had to come to terms with the fact of, you know, what do I prioritize? What's most important in my life? And that's maybe getting into some existential type of conversations and some personal vision stuff. But I would encourage you, and I got to jump off this call, but I would encourage you as you're walking away from this meeting is to really think about, you know, what it is you want to do in your life and why you want to do it and just be intentional about it. You know, if you do want to just do creative stuff, then, you know, put yourself in an environment where you can do as much of that as possible. If you want to just make some extra money and do something else in your life to, you know, by making extra money or building wealth, then, you know, that might change how you currently are approaching your business. Maybe it won't. But food for thought.
Well, I really appreciate all the advice you've given me here, Brent. I mean, this is a lot of really good feedback, and I'm definitely going to look back and into this phone call here, and you know, some really good points. I really appreciate your time, and I hope that somebody else out there can benefit from the chat that we've had today. And I mean, I can't say thank you enough. Really, this has been really great.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your time as well, Eddie. Definitely thanks for reaching out on Freelance Switch and the NetTuts website, and hopefully we'll keep in touch and talk soon.
Sounds great. Thank you very much once more.
All right. See you, mate. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye.